Hi there. Welcome to Journey On. I'm Dave Smelser. So we all end up lonely sometimes. Sometimes friends move away, or sometimes we take a risk that costs us a great community we love. And sometimes just pressing forward as deeply as we can into the journey God seems to be leading us on can make us feel a little alone. It's been said that the great spiritual teachers, the biggies, don't teach us what to know. They teach us how to know. And we're going to think today about that as we consider some modern research and some deep wisdom about loneliness and connection. Along with some stories from me, you'll hear about some fascinating research from a Columbia professor. And we'll consider some profound thoughts from among Christianity's first great mystics who knew a lot about this sort of loneliness, the so-called desert fathers and mothers of the 4th century. A religious cliche is that Christianity isn't a religion. It's a relationship. But pressing in to the ins and outs of how great spirituality empowers bone-deep relationship, whatever your circumstances, turns out to be a big deal. Before we continue, a quick note. If this stuff interests you, I lead a fun online group with people from all over the U.S. and beyond on Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Email mail, M-A-I-L, at blueoceanfaith.org for all the info, and we'll get you set up. All right, kick us off, Ryan Hood, for On Loneliness and Connection. Years back, I left a graduate program because I became persuaded that God was opening up an opportunity in the arts for me and that God wanted me to go for it. And I moved from the Los Angeles area to the Bay Area because I had a friend who was interested in working with me on this stuff there. And I'd used to live there, so one perk was I knew I would have plenty of friends to connect with once I got there. But then in a pretty brief period of time, friend after friend after friend left the area as new opportunities opened up for them, to the point that I suddenly felt as isolated as I could remember. I was working a make-a-living job that was largely something I did on my own. And then I'd return home to roommates who were kind of introverted and self-contained. And I joined in with a church that then, shortly thereafter, unexpectedly folded. And I came to realize I had pretty much nobody to connect with after my solitary job each day. Though I did enjoy my attempt at my art dreams, to be fair. And all that sent me back to God with a big question. Did doing my best to follow wherever he was leading me invite a kind of loneliness? Is the nature of following God into uncharted territory, by definition, that most everyone else won't be there? They'll be wherever the normal people are. And if so, what did that mean? Because that seemed like a pretty big deal. I recently thought about this time in my life when a friend passed along a fascinating interview with this Columbia professor named Lisa Miller. It's from the Yale Center for Faith and Culture, and the interviewer is Matt Crossman. And Miller is making lots of fascinating points about depression and spirituality, looking at how a certain sort of robust spirituality can thicken parts of the brain associated with depression and can provide a decade-long respite from dark nights of the soul and other juicy stuff like that. But Crossman ultimately asked Miller what exactly the spirituality she's talking about is that will do such great stuff. And I thought back to things that came up during this lonely time of mine when I heard her answer.
So if we look across the many world traditions and the different religious traditions, we see time and time again that there's one dimension of personal spirituality which is by far the most predictive of health and wellness, the greatest source of resilience really known to the medical or social sciences, and that is a strong personal relationship with the divine, a direct relationship, a two-way lived relationship with our higher power. In the Judeo-Christian tradition, that can take the form of a dialogue. And so in science, it's often assessed as I turn to God for guidance in times of difficulty. When I have a tough decision to make, I ask myself, what really does God want me to do? That dimension of spirituality is more protective against depression, substance use and abuse, risk-taking, and is more predictive of academic success, thriving, commitment, and forgiveness than anything known to the medical or social sciences. That is the heart of the strength of spirituality as reflected in our health and wellness. Now, if we look around the world, that takes different forms. So for instance, in some Eastern traditions, there's maybe a sense of oneness, that I'm one with the universe, rather than a dialogue. That's a different cognitive wrap around it, if you will, but it is still foundationally a personal relationship with transcendence. And in the rich indigenous traditions, we may see spirit in and through all living beings. Mm. So Crow has shown me, or the creator through wind and sun has shown me. This is, again, a direct lived relationship.
If you've been a churchgoer, her answer will have echoes of what you were taught there, pointing to, however she puts it, a lived relationship with the divine or something. A spirituality that's not a religion, but is a relationship, is the way you might have heard it. The difference might be how far she pushes it. And I suppose a difference might be her going on to talk about how this might get lived out in Eastern or Native American religious settings. That's probably not something you heard in your church, but to me, it's pretty fascinating. The biggie spiritual teachers make a fascinating and challenging point along these lines that brings two things into tension. On the one hand, if you continue to follow God where God leads you, then yes, as was true with me, they teach you that it's likely God will take you where there is no crowd, where you run a very real risk of feeling lonelier than you wish you were. On the other hand, these teachers say that the reward for that can be a kind of joyful connection beyond what you've known before, that this journeying space we talk about here is in fact distilled connection in some way. That can seem paradoxical, and it's worth considering whether it's a trade you want to make. So let's keep working this paradox for a moment and see where it leads us. So back in that lonely time, God seemed to make me an interesting offer. Namely, that when my somewhat solitary job was over each day, if I didn't have the kind of connection I wished I did, I should take a long walk with him and learn to cultivate the kind of spirituality Dr. Miller was talking about. She also, I should mention, later talks about how the perfect 1-2 punch for the transformative spirituality she's advocating for starts with a relational two-way connection with God that she just talked about, but then continues into contemplative spirituality, both. Anyway, in this time, I started taking long walks each day in which I tried to learn more about how to cultivate this two-way relationship with God. I talked about this a bit on episode 5 of this podcast called Find Wonder, Find Adventure, where the spiritual teacher I focused on was the 17th century French monk named Brother Lawrence. Today, we're going to look at this, though, in a bit more depth. So as Brother Lawrence taught, I did my best on long walks each day to cultivate a two-way conversation with God, where in the spirit of what the New Testament book of James chapter 1 teaches, which I looked at in some depth there, I did my best to ask God whatever questions were on my mind, and then I tried to be still enough to sense what he might be saying in response, and then again, as per James 1, I suspended disbelief about whether whatever I sensed back was actually from God, but I acted as if it was and went from there in order to see what would happen. So at the time, I would do this mostly on walks. My wife, Grace, a more extroverted person than I am, likes to do it with a paper and pen. Some people like a laptop for this. These daily walks with God for me, though, led to some surprising outcomes which did address my friendlessness. So among the things that came up in these long conversations was, in fact, a nudge to explore a relationship with Grace. I had not thought of her romantically until one of these chatty times when God seemed directly to mention her and then to say, among many other attractive things about her, that she would go great with the kind of spiritual journey I was experiencing. Grace and I didn't have the smoothest dating process. While we both really enjoyed each other and looked forward to times together, she had pretty specific expectations from a religious perspective about exactly how a dating process should go, and by expressing interest in her, I had already done the wrong thing. One night, after we had a lovely evening together, as I was dropping her off, she said these memorable words to me, and I think I'm quoting them pretty accurately. "If you think that we'll get to know each other with evenings like this, but then a time will come when I'll turn a corner and be romantically interested in you, don't hold your breath." Now, just to say, that seemed both kind of harsh and demoralizing. So the next day, I went out to have a whopper of a conversation with God, given all my chatting with God that I'd been doing. The conversation began with me saying that while God may have directed me to Grace, I was out on this relationship, to which, in the James 1 spirit of things I've just described, I felt God say to me, "Oh, she has no idea what she's talking about." To which I said back, "Well, I'm no expert, but what do the words 'don't hold your breath' mean to you?" And I felt God say some pretty specific stuff to me to the effect that I should give him 3 months of not breaking off the relationship with Grace and seeing what happened. If, God seemed to say to me, after 3 months I wasn't happy with where the relationship had gone, I should feel free to tell God off and let God know what's what. But until that time, I should hang in there and see what happened. 2 months later, Grace got in touch with me to say she was in love with me and would I forgive her for those things she'd said. And as I tape this, we've been happily married 27 years and have had quite a lot of adventures in the spirit of these podcasts. This sort of stuff speaks to me to Lisa Miller's point about the power of a two-way relational spirituality that will offer us all these benefits and which evidently is the foundation of a spiritual antidote to loneliness. I'm sold. But I will say that I've learned something unexpected as I've taught this to thousands of people over a long stretch of time, which is that a whole lot of people admire this and take encouragement from it, but never quite pull it off themselves. For most of them, the idea of having a relationship with God is appealing and non-controversial, but the mechanics of what I'm describing just didn't take for them. I remember going to one youth baptism in our church and hearing like six consecutive teens who were getting baptized say, before they got baptized, the same thing. I'm doing this because I think I believe in Jesus, but I've got to say that I can't hear God's voice like Dave talks about, so I might be full of it. After the sixth of these, it felt a little depressing. Now, for some people, the issue is the subjectivity of the whole enterprise. It's possible you have to be sort of a whimsical, intuitive person to pull this Brother Lawrence, James chapter 1, Lisa Miller thing off. One of the teens then was, in my experience, a particularly literally minded kid. And it seemed to me that for them to hear God's voice, God would have to come to earth in the flesh, get their attention, encourage them to focus while God was talking to them, and spell out very directly whatever the important message was. So the kicker was often how hard it was to do the two key steps in this of first, getting still enough to sense how God might be responding to your comments and questions and conversation, and then secondly, suspending disbelief about whatever you heard back. In particular, most people who had a problem with this couldn't pull off over the long haul suspending that disbelief. It got taxing to them. Lisa Miller actually talks about this challenge in the interview here in response to sort of a blunt devil's advocate question from Crossman.
To say I talk to God is pious. To say that God talks back is madness.
You know, from a clinical perspective, there's a vast difference between a sacred dialogue and quite different from that psychosis. Psychosis tends to be narcissistic, it tends to be negative, it tends to be bizarre, right? The sacred dialogue is life-giving, it's affirming, it's beautiful, it's directive, it bears fruit. It's an entirely different experience. Now, certainly one person can have both experiences, but they are tuning in on different channels.
So let's go back to feeling lonely. How does this chatty spirituality address that exactly? Because however chatty one's spirituality might be, if the fact is that we have no friends, it's not entirely clear how an invisible God can address that problem, apart from like bringing us friends. The Desert Fathers and Mothers of the 4th century, among Christianity's first great mystics, had some provocative things to say about this, as people who, in response to a Christianity that they felt had been co-opted by the state, followed Jesus in this two-way sense all the way out to trying to find him in the desert where they set up camp. This was totally outside of the system. It was what you might call a different Christian product, as it were. Ultimately, it got uneasily brought into the religious system as it became the basis of monasteries. But what did they discover as they risked this loneliness of hearing God's voice and following it all the way into a place where very few people were? Here are some things that they and other contemplatives tell us we should keep in mind when we feel lonely. First, we should regard solitude and silence as a form of fasting. I'll say it again. We should regard solitude and silence as a form of fasting. The Desert Fathers and Mothers, of course, found a lot of their spirituality in asceticism, sort of denying themselves stuff. And fasting, denying yourself food, is a way of building up what they call unction, which I'm sure I'm saying this improperly, but it's a sort of credit with God in hopes of seeing great spiritual things, like you've got more on your account. It was something they gave a lot of attention to. But for them, solitude and silence before God did the same thing as fasting. Taken as a spiritual act, it built up joy and a kind of heightened spiritual connection that couldn't be found any other way. Secondly, they tell us to renounce clinging, renounce what they call clinging. A major contemplative insight the world over is that we're served by letting go of, this will come as a surprise if you haven't heard this before, our attachment to good things in our past. Holding on to good memories can seem like a virtue, but not to them. Because this sets up a standard for assessing whether our life is good or not that becomes a weapon to whatever God is offering us right now. And what God is offering us right in this moment is where all riches are found, they tell us. So let's say we remember a personal golden age of maybe feeling befriended, and our current reality comes up short in that respect. Until we match or surpass that level of friendships, we have a complaint about our present reality that we won't drop. Clinging to some previous memory or standard turns out to be a big cause of unhappiness and feeling denied. Many contemplatives, as they meditate or practice centering prayer, will get still and then ask God, "Can you show me anything I'm clinging to?" And if God does, they'll ask for help in letting go of it. So I did that recently, and God seemed to drop a whopper kind of clinging that I'd been doing without being fully conscious of it. But when he brought it to mind, I knew it was absolutely on target, and it felt like such a relief to let it go, like such an opportunity to just be present to what God is doing for me right now without putting a gun at God's head, as it were, that he owed me something better than some previous time of my life. And then maybe 2 hours later, it struck me that I had real opportunities I could pursue that hadn't even crossed my mind because they didn't feel like the old good thing. It was as if my vision had cleared. Renounce clinging. Third, be present to the connections God is offering in this moment. Be present to the connections God is offering right now in this moment. Now that you're not comparing this moment to other moments and finding this moment wanting, see if God will point out connections God is offering now with no judgment about how you feel about whatever God is offering. Recently, I realized there was a whole category of rich connection to people that I had been experiencing, but I hadn't really regarded it as friendship in the way I was looking for, but in retrospect, it totally was. A friend just told me how they'd been totally undervaluing how important one group of relationships they had was, that once they opened their heart to those relationships, they realized how much they meant to them. Perhaps the biggest idea that the spiritual masters teach about what we're calling journeying spirituality here, the kind of presence to God that comes from journeying with God into new places, is a bold one. That everything we need is in fact present right here in the present moment. Everything. I mean, that's kind of a big thought. One teacher has made a big part of his message that being present to this moment is the same as experiencing God's Holy Spirit. That's the only place you can experience the Holy Spirit. This teacher points out that because of clinging or because of living in the past or living in the future, we often can't fathom that everything we need is right in this moment. But I mean, how could that be? We have so many money worries, let's say, or maybe we feel so poor relationally, or maybe things we wish we could do feel so remote. We could travel maybe or have great job opportunities, but we don't. So surely it's pie in the sky thinking that everything we need is right in this moment if we can just get present to it. But these teachers are not sympathetic to our pushback. They just don't drop the point. This spirituality, they say, is the opposite of lonely. In fact, it offers like distilled molecular level connection. No matter how you slice it, all you're going to find in this spirituality, they tell us, is connection. As we get a taste of it, often we'll realize that we have more human connection than we've been realizing, or we realize, as I did with Grace, that there might be great relationships available to us if we wanted to pursue them. Or maybe we'll realize, as did the desert fathers and mothers, that we actually feel more connected to just being present to God in this space than we realized. The reason Lisa Miller's spirituality can at first seem conventional but proves harder than it looks when we want to get the benefit she claims for it is that it takes joyful, trusting, ongoing practice. It's not a creed. It's something you do or don't do. And what it breeds is that greatest of theological virtues, at least in reference to our relationship with God, which is trust. Renouncing clinging breeds trust. The only reason we cling to things in the first place is it gives us a sense of control and of grievance, which is a form of control. And if we let things we cling to go, what does that mean? Who are we in that world? It empowers us to trust that God will help us figure that out. Finding the spiritual connected power that comes from solitude and silence empowers trust, and trust is a good way to live. In this same stretch of my life, my art stuff has gotten rolling. As I mentioned in a previous podcast, I wrote plays, and my first play at that point had been produced, and with plenty of anxious moments along the way, it had actually sold out its run and gotten some great press and even some short-lived movie inquiries. And now I'd written my follow-up play, and it was feeling a little dicey. It had some great qualities, but it wasn't coming together all that well as we were nearing the opening. And I went out for one of these walks to chat with God and get some perspective. And I prayed something like, "God, this play has to work. Yes, I've had a promising first play, but I have seen lots of fellow regional playwrights have a promising play, but then a failed follow-up, and they all went to graduate school and engineering after that or some such thing. This has to work." And right away, I sense God's comforting response being, "Oh, by no means does this have to work." I was being ironic with the comforting thing. After a pause, as I waited for some context from God and didn't get any, I said, "What, are you saying this isn't going to work?" To which I sensed him saying, "Of course I am rooting for you, Dave, but life is long and you're a young man and I'm totally there for you one way or another, but I'm a pretty creative God. If this play doesn't work, let's see together what happens next. And I'm proud to tell you, the play didn't work. It was a painful production process. And then not long after that, Grace and I, now married, got an invitation to join with a group of friends in Cambridge, Massachusetts, to help start a new church, and that happily took over the next two decades of our lives. God invited me, after the failure of the play, to let go of clinging to a sense of what my life had to be in order to be present to what he wanted to offer me. So I am cheering you on as you do whatever your next step in pressing into this two-way spirituality is, through this kind of chatting with God and suspending disbelief as you go, and through the kind of stillness and meditation that makes it possible to notice and move past clinging. Okay, that's it for this week's Journey On. Again, join us for a Wednesday online group if you're so inclined. You can learn more at mail@blueoceanfaith.org, and I will look forward to talking with you again soon.